Kavya Krishna, and you are listening to Women in Risk Finance, a podcast dedicated to female leaders in the disaster risk finance space who champion financial resilience towards natural disasters in vulnerable countries. Today, we have the absolute honor of speaking to Rosalia V. De Leon, Treasurer of the Philippines. The Philippines, located in the Pacific Ring of Fire, is one of the world's most high-risk countries. Every year, it is hit by disasters such as typhoons, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and floods. Over the past decade, the country has become a champion in disaster risk finance in the region, expanding the menu of tools and instruments for financial resilience against natural disasters. These innovations include the institution of the first catastrophic bond, the development of a parametric insurance program for the government, amongst many others. Treasurer Leia, as she's fondly known, is the driving force behind all these innovations and advancements. She was appointed the Treasurer of the Philippines for the third time by President Ferdinand R. Marcos Jr. on July 18, 2022. As the Treasurer, she directs the formulation of policies on borrowing, investment, and capital market development. She also handles the formulation of operational guidelines for fiscal and financial policies. Well, without further delay, let us meet the incredible woman herself and learn more about her background and how she got into this fantastic and fascinating world of disaster risk finance. Good evening, Treasurer Leia, and thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you join us for our Women in Risk Finance podcast. So before we get into the specifics of disaster risk finance, we'd really like to hear from you about your own journey. So tell us a little bit about yourself, your professional journey, and how did you start out with these decisions you made? Did you always know you were going to work in this field? And what brought you to doing what you're doing today?
First of all, thanks for having me. It's good to also be among women company. I suppose the reason for being so, because, well, women, we're more persistent and creative and, of course, very innovative. Now, talking about myself, I started working in government as soon as I finished college from the state university. So I started working with the Department of Finance and was really involved in terms of the International Finance Group, in terms of liaising with our development partners. In my case, I was first working on the portfolio for the United States because of the presence of the bases in the country. And of course, I was also assigned as the advisor of the executive director at the Asian Development Bank. I covered the ADB from 1998 to 2004, and then went back to the Department of Finance to be the deputy finance secretary of the International Finance Group. And in 2015 to 2016, I was the alternate executive director at the World Bank, covering the constituency of Brazil, Colombia, Dominican Republic, Ecuador, Haiti, Panama, the Philippines, Suriname, and Trinidad and Tobago. Now, just on this one, so everybody's asking me why the Philippines is not together with these countries in Latin America. So my usual answer is that, you know, in the Philippines, together with these other countries like Colombia and Brazil, Ecuador, we're always the front runners in the Miss Universe. So it's just a common denominator why we are all together in this constituency. So after my stint in the World Bank, I came back and again, I was appointed as the Treasurer of the Philippines. So before going to the World Bank, I was already the Treasurer of the Philippines from 2012 to 2014. And then when I came back in 2017, I was reappointed as Treasurer. And of course, until now, I carry that position. So I've been serving three presidents as Treasurer of the Philippines. So far, so good. And I'm very much, it's a very fulfilling professional journey for me and all the things that we're doing here in the Bureau of Treasury, including that, of course, have the long road that we have traversed in terms of disaster risk financing, of course, together with the support from the World Bank.
Thank you, Treasure Leah. That was really interesting to hear all about your journey and the different multilaterals you've worked with, and also all the countries you've covered, the countries with all the representation of the beauty pageants. I really love that fact over there. That was very interesting. I always wonder if there's some sort of connection between the most vulnerable countries and the most beautiful women. But having come to Philippines a couple of times, I should say yes, there definitely is. But I'm actually going to push a little further and ask you one question. Did you always know that you wanted to work in international development and you wanted to be in this area from the time, you know, you were a young girl? Is there something which inspired you, something which wanted to take you in this direction, especially risk finance and climate finance? Because it's a new topic which has really emerged now in the last decade, and there is this urgency with climate change and everything which is happening. So what inspired you?
After college, when I started working in the Department of Finance, it's very interesting for me to be working in the sphere of international finance, because first of all, we see how multilateral agencies like the World Bank, the ADB, and of course, bilateral countries support the Philippines in our development roadmap. So at the time also, the Philippines were suffering from a lot of challenges, and we are really very much reliant on this foreign assistance. So it's been a very fulfilling job and of course fulfilling work for me to see how we're able to use this foreign assistance to be able to help us, overcome all these challenges, particularly whenever we have natural disasters visiting the Philippines. So there would be instances whenever they would be getting a lot of commodity assistance. Like I recall the time that, you know, Australian Aid would be providing us with a rice donation, and they would be coming outside of the building, and we would have to be able to sell this rice cabans so that we'd be able to generate a lot of cash to support our work. Disaster relief. And also at the time I was also selling a lot of, you know, because all this commodity assistance that's also being provided by Japan, by the United States, so we have to monetize it. So we, you know, it was like, it's not just finance, but at the same time a marketing job for me to be doing, to be able to generate as much cash to be able to support our budget. So from that time on, I think we also would like to see how we'll be able to improve more in terms of the processing and at the same time the utilization of all this foreign assistance. So I think that's really what has motivated me into continue my the work here in terms of international finance. And moving on, when we had these challenges, when we are frequently visited by all these natural disasters has come the way of the Philippines, given that we are situated in the Pacific Ring of Fire and the typhoon, we are visited by at least 20 typhoons a year, and we suffered losses like amounting to about 1% of our GDP. So all the more, there's that drive, the motivation, and the passion to look for ways and explore, out-of-the-box solutions so that we'll be able to cover as much as we could to be able to help those who are most affected by all these natural disasters in the country. And of course, those most vulnerable are the ones that really have the face of poverty. So all the more, there's that drive to be able to assist and provide, not only just assist, but ensure a quick response that that gets into their way, because otherwise they would continue suffering from this very debilitating situations that they have already have been encountering. So all the more, I think me particularly, we'd like to see good solutions and realistic, practical, and doable, so that this can easily be implemented.
Thank you so much, Treasure Leah. That was very interesting and exciting to hear you speak about this, and for several reasons, right? One is your passion to protect the most vulnerable. That clearly comes through, and especially in the last part when you're talking about finding innovative and out-of-the-box solutions. And I think that is something which you and the Philippines are really known for, because I heard that you were the first person who engaged the Philippines on the development of a disaster risk financing strategy, and you've championed a lot of the efforts in the Philippines since. So Could you tell us a little bit more about that, that process? And also, since you engaged the Philippines in a DRF strategy, you know, close to a decade ago, and started on these efforts, what has changed? How has the landscape changed?
Yeah. So, well, I recall that incident when we had a very strong typhoon in the Philippines. So I was coming from a meeting. And then I was on my way to the office, and it was a Saturday. You know, it was raining hard, but not that hard, but it was a continuous downpour. So I got stuck up, you know, under our light rail transit system. So I was there from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. So it was good that a truck came by and, you know, we were only able to pass by because it really divided the water. So we came after the truck and we were able to move on. But otherwise, you would have really been stuck up under that, you know, underwater for maybe even for a day. So with that, I think I realized that, and it's a personal experience. And what more, you know, this here I am, maybe not so comfortable, but I'm inside the car. But what more for those who have suffered because of this calamity and, you know, their homes have been destroyed and those who are not homeless even for that and would not find shelter. So it's about time that we, you know, we are able to attack this issue, given that because this is a permanent problem for the Philippines. It's not a passing, a fleeting issue for us. So you have to address this head on. So we have this very good cooperation and collaboration with the World Bank. We started working on the disaster risk financing and insurance strategy. So, and there we started with the CAT DBO and of course looking for alternative solutions. So that would provide, you know, the quick liquidity that would be needed by the government to address all these issues. Otherwise, at the time, we were also fiscally challenged. So there would not be enough funding for all these other requirements to be able to protect and at the same time, respond quickly to the needs of our most vulnerable sector of the country. And also being able to provide the incentive for other local governments to also see how the national government is doing its part, but at the same time would also require the cooperation from our local government units because we have to do this together. So it's a whole of government effort and not just relying so much on the national government to be able to address these issues of protecting the vulnerable constituents. So, and especially in that particular segment of the country, our eastern seaboard, which is really frequently visited by natural calamities. So we are able to already get the support from these local governments to also, on their end, develop their own local disaster risk financing and strategy and insurance protection for their own stakeholders. So over time, this initiative not just started from the Philippines, but we also shared the same problems with our peers in the region, including Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand. And so gave birth to a regional collaboration and dialogue, which of course we have now the CDRIF and the ADRIF-P. And we, Philippines, of course, as a member, has also been very proactive and vocal in terms of how this regional platform will be able to help each country in the Southeast Asian ring to be able to find ways to provide some good examples and best practices in disaster risk financing.
Thank you. No, this is really helpful because I think you've really given us an amazing background as to your own story about how you were stuck in these torrential rains and, you know, overnight in your car observing. And I think you've made two very strong cases. The first is you've made this case for where I said your passion clearly came through in the first question about how disaster risk finance truly can protect the most vulnerable. And I love that you've explained it so well and illustrated it with these examples and really spoken about it. And I think the second point you brought out, which is very interesting, is also the importance of collaboration. You spoke about working with local governments. You spoke about working with regional platforms. And to me, this is really a very strong testament of how advanced the Philippines is in, you know, their DRFI strategy, because these are not just the hardcore technical pieces. These are the soft pieces, you know, almost like the soft filling between two hard Oreo cookies, which really stick the engagement together and bring it together and cement it and make it stronger. And I think you've given us an excellent example of how this works in your country. So thank you so much for that. And I think there's lots of lessons we can draw from this, as well as a lot of the audience listening from other countries. I actually want to ask you one quick question, just to follow up on what you said. So you started with the DRFI strategy in the Philippines, and then you did a catastrophic drawdown option from the World Bank. Then you worked on catastrophic bonds, which is all different financial instruments. But I think what is really exciting for me is, as the DRF work in Philippines evolved, you further push this into broader disaster risk management and more innovative instruments, like, for example, thinking about public asset management. So what was your thinking, and how did you do this? What was your strategy behind this?
Yeah, again, it goes back to the fiscal challenge. It's not just the vulnerable sector that we have to protect, but also all the more the assets, and particularly the strategically important assets like our school buildings, hospitals, our dams. If they get destroyed by these natural calamities, then it would also require so much resources from the government coffers. So we need to make sure that they are, you know, they have the resiliency to be able to withstand all these natural hazards. But then I come back again to, you know, during that forum in the World Bank, it's not just being resilient, but it is also being anti-fragile. Because resilient, you can always withstand, but you do not do better. So being anti-fragile, you become out stronger, but better. So it's not just being, you know, in that status situation that you are as you are after a typhoon, but it's really more of being stronger, because you are doing something more even that can withstand all these natural calamities that you are suffering from. And then the other things that we are also now also infusing technology in our protection of our assets. So we have now a more guided and informed decision that we are making, in terms of, because we have the right information, we have the good information that we need to first provide the insurance protection, which we can buy from the market, because we're also transferring the risk of these assets into the market and get better pricing if we have good information on data set. At the same time, we're also using our technology in terms of being able to have screening, also to be able to simulate and provide quantitative and qualitative analysis of the risk exposures of these assets. So that way, we are prepared, in terms of what needs to be done because of this information set that we're getting from the technology that we are infusing in these assets. But at the same time also, we are already prepared, because we are buying the kind of protection that these assets would require from the market. And we are buying this, better price because we have the right the good information set, and that would also reduce the basis risk to be able to insure these assets.
Thank you so much. I think this was actually very interesting to hear from you, and also just speaking about how you're innovating in this space. What are the different moving pieces? I'm very curious to know what is coming next on the DRFI front from Philippines. What can we expect in the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, first of all, I think we'd like to complete the asset registry. So now we're just compiling information on school buildings and hospitals. And not even for these assets, we don't have the complete information. So we still have to get, and of course, continuously update this information on these assets. At the same time, also, we'd like also to be able to now apply also technology in our agricultural sector. Again, our farmers, our fisher folks, they are the face of poverty. So we'd like to improve the kind of protection, the insurance that's being also provided by the agency, the Philippine Crop Insurance Corporation, and use better technology to be able to really navigate and be able to also assess the kind of risk that the farmers face. And at the same time also, make better use of the kind of subsidy that the government provides to this corporation. So because government, we subsidize the premium for these farmers, but not all farmers are being covered, and maybe not all farmers who have suffered from these natural calamities are also getting a good kind of subsidy that they would really require to be able to recover, more so on a timely manner. So we'd like to really make this corporation, this agency, more effective and efficient. And that would require, of course, more operational changes and reforms in terms of how they do the business model that they apply, and use also technology. And of course, apply the best practices that we can see from other more mature markets, like those that have been using more technological innovation in their agricultural insurance schemes.
Thank you, Treasurer Leah. I love how every time we ask you about DRF, you have this great juxtaposition. You know, for example, you're thinking about the most vulnerable when you're thinking of the agriculture insurance scheme. And at the same time, you have this breadth of strategy where you're also thinking about the asset registry, which is really about technology and innovation. So It's very interesting to see how you're bringing in these two different contrasts into one very cohesive DRF strategy. And I think that is really somewhere where the Philippines shines. So moving on a little bit to a different kind of question. You have built an incredible team and obviously to be able to implement all these different initiatives. And we've heard from your team that you're an excellent leader and you continuously keep your team motivated and you give them challenging projects and you're a great mentor. So tell us a little bit about your leadership style and how do you manage to bring in these really incredible people and keep them constantly inspired to work on all these exciting projects.
Yeah, and maybe Shannon can also attest to this. So whenever we try to recruit people, you know, how low the government pay is here in the Philippines. So whenever we recruit, we'll always make sure that, you know, they know where they're going. So the first thing that we'll tell them is that if you're entering the Bureau of Treasury, at most what we can afford is to provide you with, the salary to be able to gas up your car, and at the same time, provide for your, for the dates with your girlfriend or boyfriend. So, but you have to be continuously under the fold of your parents, under that parent foundation support. So that's one. But at the same time, you have to make sure that, you know, they'll be able, when they get out of the Bureau of Treasury, they are equipped to be and empowered to be on their own. Because we do not operate on a ladderized scheme. So everybody gets their fair share in terms of what they're supposed to be doing. Like, for instance, Shannon, when she was just like 6 months in Treasury, when she worked on the cut one, so we let her be. Now, you know, she has to conceptualize and work on her own. But of course, if there would be some issues or blocks that would have to be resolved, or some of the things that would need our attention, then she can always run to us to be able to get the guidance. But we want her to work on her own and see how she moves around all these issues by herself. And that also, springs the kind of initiative and creativity in all in the staff. At the same time, also, we send them to good trainings and, of course, good networking. So they're able to liaise and discuss with their counterparts like the World Bank or the ADB or our market participants to be able to really understand better what's happening around them in the environment. What are the current systems that are in place, what are the issues of the day. So, and they have to also adjust some of the issues themselves. But of course, we're always there to be able to guide them. So it's not so much of the monetary compensation, but it's really the kind of networking, the experience, and of course, the kind of being more creative and innovative in what you do that would really, that sparks, that incentive for them to stay in the Treasury. So I've had staff with me for almost like 10 years when I moved from the Department of Finance. chance to hear into that treasury. And I guess I'm also fortunate that, you know, I have good people working for me. Because as they say, you know, these good people makes you shine as well. So you better keep them with you all the time.
Thank you so much, Treasure Leah. I think that's, you know, the example you gave is incredible because, like you said, there is not a great financial incentive, but to be able to work on something so innovative and important in the beginning of your career and also learn from you, right? Learn with your mentorship and your guidance. I'm sure that's why you have a great team who truly supports you. We've come to the last question, and this is what I'm most curious about. You have an incredibly busy schedule. You have a very, very demanding job. You have a huge team who you mentor and build, and you're always thinking of new ways to push boundaries and innovate on DRF. But what do you do for fun? How do you balance your life? What are your hobbies? What are your passions that you have time for, if at all, any outside of work?
Well, caveat for one, I'm all by myself here in the Philippines because my two siblings are in the US. My family is, my second family is basically the Bureau of Treasury and my work here. And, you know, I really want the Bureau of Treasury to be able to be a better institution, to be some institution that would be recognized in government, not only maybe here in the Philippines, but maybe as you know, I think we're getting traction there, being recognized and appreciated in terms of the work that we do here. And so I'm happy that this is something that we're able to share also outside of the the Philippines, outside of the government. And so we have to make sure that this is something that would be, you know, that would be leaving a legacy for this institution. Now for fun. Well, of course, Sundays are really for me to rest and at the same time, you know, catch up with my friends. Maybe also when the university athletic basketball season comes in, starts kicking in, maybe that's around September to December. So we enjoy watching basketball games together with the staff. Because we have here also some sort of rivalry between our universities from both, the University of Shane and my university. And so we watch basketball games together. And of course, we all also try to enjoy, night outs with our, ex-colleagues from the treasury. So we continue to have that kind of connection with those who have graduated from the Bureau of Treasury. And but at the same time, you know, continue to enjoy the friendship and camaraderie that we have here in the Bureau.
Thank you, Treasurer Leah. That was very inspiring, especially when you said that, you know, this is your second family. And one of the things you would truly want to do is to make the Bureau of Treasury one of the best places to be. And I could sense your passion over there when you said that. And, you know, I'm certainly feeling very inspired. And, you know, if all of us felt like that about the work we do, I think the world would be a much better place. And even the uptake of disaster risk finance, I think, would be very, very different. So thank you for that very motivational last piece. But I do have one question. Whose college basketball team is winning? Is it yours or is it Shannon's?
Shannon graduated, is the current champion. We were the champion during the previous year. So they've always been the champion. So we were champion after like 36 years, no? So they said that it was luck that made us champions. It was just a practice for them to lose.
Okay.
Yeah, Kevin, let me say that, you know, we are what we are today and the kind of the drive, the passion that we have, because we also have very good counterparts like Tatiana and of course everyone in the bank. Because without their support, without, you know, their own breath of the freshness of the kind of the creativity and of course the kind of solutions that they also bring forward and introduce to us, we would not also be in this place. So I think it cuts both ways that, you know, we have this kind of, the good DRFI strategy that we have right now. And of course, and the continued support that we're getting from the bank.
Absolutely. I think it's been the bank's pleasure to work with Philippines and to work with colleagues who are so passionate and really working towards helping the most vulnerable. So thank you so much. And this was fantastic. And I hope this is one of many more interviews to come. But I think this is a great starting point to have all of us over here inspired and working towards a better future and more resilient future. Thank you, Treasurer Leah.
Thank you.